Good evening, one and all. Yes, it's June. Halfway through another year, it's already disappearing, and I have no idea where it's disappearing. But that's what happens when you get old, as they say. You know, age is like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. But my guest enjoyed that. Anyway, I'm back. I'm back, and so is my guest. Now, I say back with my guest because he was on the show, I think it was April 2021, where he told this wonderful biography of his life. We'll talk about it when I get him on. Because on the show today, I have, and I've got to remember how it's pronounced, I have the one and only Ed. Hey, Jim. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
You got it right. That's great.
I know. I was looking. I think I'm sure they told me how it's pronounced. I'm going through all the old emails, and there it was. Ed Hadim. Ed, how are you?
I am fine. In fact, this is at my age, when people ask me how I am, I say I'm grateful.
But exactly. The same to me. At mine, they say, "How are you doing?" I say, "Well, I woke up this morning." That's a start.
Exactly right. That's a good
this,
one.
Yeah. This side up of the grouse and everything like that. I spoke to you before the show, but just to tell everybody else, here in Connecticut, where I am, we're expecting a big storm. The sky is the colour of sort of like burnt yellow. Now, some of that's to do with the smoke coming from Nova Scotia and Canada, but a lot of places around where I am, including where my son is and stuff like that, they've had a huge storm. Here, we haven't had it yet. So if I suddenly disappear, everybody, could be that the storm's hit me. And hopefully not another lightning strike, as I was just saying with Ed. Anyway, Ed, great to have you back on the show. Of course, when you were on before...
Good to be back.
When you were on before, that was to do with your book On a Road Less Travelled, which was basically... Yeah. This wonderful story of yours about, you know, where you came from. You were kidnapped by your father when you were little and sort of basically raised in all sorts of issues, which you came through, survived, and actually, well, now you're all sorts of things. You know, you got scholarships, you're on the boards of this, you run this and everything like that. How was the response to that wonderful book, after I spoke to you last time?
Well, it looks pretty good. My publicist said we sold 15,000 plus copies.
Wow. And
we had 205 star ratings.
Great.
So she says for non celebrity, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, that is terrific. That really is terrific.
More importantly, we've been at 10 different schools, of which, you know, were very enthusiastic about it. So.
That's what I was going to ask about that, because it's that sort of story how you managed to get through everything, how you managed to sort of from, as we said, a really rough sort of background and growing up and stuff like that, and how you managed to push your way through to, you know, the person you are now.
Well, that's the message the first book gives, is that anything is possible. Education is the solution to everything. And for God's sakes, don't be a victim. Those are the three main points. And it's made many times during the book's length. So.
Right. I mean, you know, you went from, as I said, I think it was three, wasn't it? You were kidnapped by your father.
Kidnapped when I was three, and basically spent my childhood in orphanages, foster homes, and hotels and motels, and the YMCA on 34th Street in New York City.
you went from there to becoming, you know, a successful Wall Street entrepreneur, this, that, and the other. I mean, it's a great book for schools to show them that with education and with the will, what's possible.
That's exactly. Anything is possible. I arrived at the University of Rochester in a black leather jacket with nothing but a scholarship and no money. 50 years later, I was the chairman of the board of trustees and gave the largest gift in the history of the university. So that tells you that anything is possible.
Right. And that's another thing. I mean, it's not that you just got there and sat on your money, if you know what I mean. You, as you say, you donated a huge gift to universities and education and pushing education, you know, by whatever way you can. It is... paramount to you, I think. I get
well,
the
yes.
impression.
In fact, I've gone on a new mini crusade. Barry, you love this, on vocational education.
Oh.
I really believe that one of the things we really have to do is to put more energy and money into vocational education. And in our golf course up here in Nantucket, we give scholarships, 2 academic scholarships a year. But last year, we gave 10 vocational scholarships. Nurses, marine engineers, public safety officers, chefs. You know, a chef to go to chef school costs $40,000
right,
a year
right.
Go to Johnson Wells. So I've started that, and I'm involved in the Keys Community College, which is also a vocational institution. I wish I could change the name from vocational to something else, but
yeah.
That's a new, I do believe education is the solution. It
oh,
really
I,
is.
And it's wonderful to do that. I got my wife's my wife's niece. She went, she's actually a history teacher at a school, and she got a holiday grant for, I can't remember what it was for. I think she was teacher of the year or something like that. But she went to which is her main subject, even though she teaches sort of lower levels. She went to Egypt, and she had 2 weeks all around the pyramids and everything like that, and she came back able to sort of really, what she did when she came back, she got the kids to bring, she got an orange for every one of the kids, and her and the kids mummified, she explained how to mummify the orange, like the Egyptians did with the bodies. Now, to me, that is something totally different. That you wouldn't know about teaching, for instance, unless you went to the place and stuff like that. Somebody else went to Italy for a week on a cook, like you said, the cook. They went to Italy to a cooking school for a week, if you like, with Italian chefs. It's wonderful if people can do this, and to see America is a little bit backward in geography and history. At schools these days, to my mind, but if you if you can go to these people, I mean, you see, we used to get French in England. We used to get the French schools all the time coming over, for the kids and stuff like that. And vice versa. I mean, how people live the different ways, especially not just the culture and the history and stuff like that. It's wonderful. And it's great that you're able to do that.
Right. And today there's more opportunity than there ever has been before. Don't tell me these are not good times. More scholarship money, more travel money, more opportunity. Period.
Yeah, indeed so. Well, we had the success of On a Road Less Traveled. As you say, it's an amazing number of books and everything like that, and the follow-up with the schools and everything. But you've now come out with a new, I guess it's a two-part book, isn't it? Called The Island of the Four Peas. Now, where did this book come from, Ed?
Well, it came from basically, I went 70 or 80 different graduations, and I had to have a message. And so I went back into my own life, and I tried to figure out the elements that basically I lived by. And I came up with these four Ps: find your passions, find your principles, find your partners, and then finally find your plans. And I decided to write a book on it, but I wanted to write a book like Who Moved My Cheese? Because I've always been fascinated by the fact that ideas down through the ages have been communicated with fables.
Yeah.
And then, you can start from the very beginning, the Bible, Aesop's Fables,
yep.
Gulliver's Travels, Don Quixote, Dr. Seuss, even Who Moved My Cheese, The Alchemist, all these were. So I decided to put this idea structure into a fable of a young boy going to an island where he meets an older man. The older man is not a teacher. He's a guide. And he guides the young man through four villages. In each village, they discuss these four Ps. And what basically is it's a book that tracks you into using your own mind. It doesn't give you any answers. It gives you a lot of questions that you have to answer. But it's in a fable form. And it's actually, the audible is only less than 3 hours, and it has 6 different voices. So it's a lot of fun as well.
Wow. Yeah, I was raised in England a lot on the Aesop fables.
Exactly
how a
right.
leopard got its spots and the armadillo and how the armadillo was formed. And all, wonderful stuff. And it, without knowing it, because it's a story, you're reading the story, but without knowing it, you're being educated. You're picking up on, you're being shown life helps, if you like, or things to do, because
that's exactly right.
You know, the don't give up, the sort of, you know, hare and the tortoise sort of thing, you know.
Prime example.
There's
so many of these, but fables are more universal. People basically can place themselves in a fable situation rather than someone telling you what to do and how to do it. Because I don't believe there are any universal answers. They all have to be individual because we're all unique. We're all a bundle of genes that get affected in different ways. And we have to answer our own questions. What my book does is framework those questions for you. They put them in a form which are kind of fun and interesting to do. And like Gulliver's Travels or like the Move My Cheese, it has many levels, and you basically create the levels.
Right.
It's to say, it's a book. Christopher Morley said a book is a situation which traps your mind in doing your own thinking. And that's what this book does. It helps you do your own thinking.
Right. I always say on the show, you know, we get a lot of books, but we get books sort of about, say, abuse or illness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And ways to live your life in a way. But I always say they are so much better if they're in a novel form than if they're in, you know, six do's and don'ts sort of thing. Because if people read the novel, they get into the story, and if there's something that they've gone through, perhaps they were abused or you know, something like that, they put themselves into that character. They see themselves and they can relate to that character, that person, rather than, as you say, just the sort of do's and don'ts and everything like that. And being part into that character, they are following it. They are learning with it. They are taking what's happening to the character and mentally comparing it with themselves. And
that's exactly right. The two characters, or the three or four characters, but you will relate to one or two of the characters in my book, almost guaranteed, because it covers almost everybody. Right.
Yeah. One of the.
And you're right.
One of the most heartbreaking. One of the most emotional things that I've had on this show was we had a bullying a month about bullying at schools and stuff like that. And this lady had written a book based on her experiences, and we were talking about it and the sort of things and the characters in it and stuff like that, and yeah, how they got through it. And she, you know, she was sort of saying, well, this is based on me and I did this, and this character got through it and went through this and this and this. After the show finished, the author and myself got an email from a young lady. And basically what she said was she was listening to the show or starting to listen to the show, and she was contemplating suicide. She'd had enough. The bullying, you know, it was got to her. She couldn't take it. She said, you know, she was at the stage where, you know, I can't do it anymore sort of thing. Anyway, she was listening to the show and picked up about it and realized, you know, after what we discussed and everything, that she can get through this. She could do this. So basically she wrote to us and saying, you know, I was going to kill myself. And then I heard what was going on, the thing, and realized that, you know, there was more to, yeah, I don't give in, you know, it was more to that sort of thing. And I thought afterwards, you know, we could have saved a person's life on the show. I mean, how much more could you ask for, Ed?
No, I get great satisfaction. I got a letter from a lady the other day that her daughter wasn't going to go to college. Uh-huh. And she said, you read my book. Now she's a freshman at Notre Dame. And she wrote me a note.
Wow.
And you can't get better satisfaction than
no,
that.
No, you can't. Not at all. No. That is wonderful. Now, I said this book is it basically in two parts? So you've got the story and then you relate to yourself. Is that how it works?
Exactly. The second part too is basically I do a short thumbnail sketch of myself. Again, it's kind of a replay of the On the Road Less Travel, just so that people understand that the process that the two characters go through in my book are essentially me as well.
Yeah.
So I want to hold that back until they go through the story.
Right. So these four P's are basically like an inner voice to you now?
Yeah, I have used them myself, and I've had people use them. And there was one young lady that used it as a positive for going getting her graduate degree.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Funny when you said it. I think, yeah, that's funny. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, if you first have to find your passion, find what turns you on, what excites you, you know, to find out what really, when you dig down deep, what makes you tick and so forth. Then once you get that, you have to, and you have to find your principles. You have to find the rules you want to follow and the lines you won't cross. And, you know, I got that early in the Catholic school, but I also got it through all through life. And by the way, your passions, your principles change. You have to add and subtract and modify and so forth. And then you have to figure out your partners, because I've found, especially in this world with technology the way it is, you're only as good as the people you surround yourself
with.
Yes, yes. So you have to learn to find good partners, and then you must write down your plans. I mean, I really believe, I sat and gave a presentation to a university about 3 years ago. One young man said, Ed, you got too many ideas. Give me one idea. And I said, very simple. Write down where you want to go and how you think you might get there. So when you come to a turn in the road, and there will be turns in the road, basically, it won't be the end of the road. You can make the turn. And so that's the kind of thing that I'm putting out in the book. And I think it's fun. It's much broader and deeper than that. But that's a real summary of what the concept is. And it's a conversation between a young man and an older man. And later on, we introduce a young woman as well. Mm-hmm. We have two voices. And it's just very good. It's each village, basically, they explore the particular aspect of it by the people in the village, which is something you'll enjoy.
Yeah, you see, I can see sort of people listening and sort of perhaps, you know, shaking their heads a bit, saying, oh my goodness, are you going to be, how can I sit and work these plans out? How can I, you know, I can't do that, where I'm going and who. You see, it's not that hard. I mean, just think, I'm going to England in October. I'm going back to England in October. Now, all I've done is a little Excel spreadsheet, and I say, okay, I've got to book this. I've got to book the flight. I've got to book the to get from Dublin to England. I've got to find book the place to stay where for the wedding we're going for. Then we're going down to Cornwall, so I've got to book the train, and then we've got to call a book of that. So that's
you've
a plan.
You've written a plan.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. A simple Excel spreadsheet.
Something happens. One of them don't. You can change the plan because you have a plan.
Exactly. Right. And I've got. This is the flight number. This is the location we're staying, you know, and everything like that. So we know what we're doing. I mean, yeah, I know things will change. Perhaps, you know, we'll get there or the train won't run or something like that, you know, something. But at least I've got the basis. And so it's something people can do every day. If you're going shopping, right, you've got a shopping list or something like that.
No, there's three magic words is write it down.
Exactly. Exactly. But you have a plan when you go, well, say plan, you have an outline sometimes rather than a plan.
Yeah. Especially in life, though, because you have a perception of life. When you start writing things down, you'll find out that some of the things that you thought are not true or some that are true.
Yeah,
but if
you
write them down and look at them, you basically can get a better handle on them. Thinking is very fuzzy, you know.
Exactly. But then if you come back, say you come back a week later or a month later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you can say, hey, that's changed a bit, but I can modify that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. Yeah. That's changed. I mean, I talk about this because I worked on Wall Street for 50 years. And I made a very big point. I had a principle that basically I would never be in the press, never be on radio, never be on television, never go on the newspapers, because I was going to run my company and spend my energy there. And when I had free time, I was going home at night, not going out, you know, with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now when I'm selling, and therefore my mentor was live happy is live hidden. Of course, when you're selling books, it's the opposite. I had to get rid of that principle and say, now I'm going to expose myself and tell my story. And so I changed my principles and I changed my passion. My passion now is taking my ideas and hoping to help somebody with them. You know, and there before I was, my ideas were very narrow. They were focused on the company that I was basically running. That was, you know, 800 people. But now I'm talking to thousands of people. So it's a totally different program. But you had to change it because I changed.
Right.
And I think that's what's important to people, is they got to recognize that people do change. I always tell everybody, take at least a couple of days in a car with your wife every year, and you'll find out you'll make it through that way, because each one of you will discuss how you've changed in the last 12 months.
Right, indeed, indeed. And this is this just an audio book, Ed, or is
no,
it...
No, the book is a beautiful book. They did a great job on the illustrations. It's hardcover. It's on Amazon. And it's also an audio book with six voices. So if you're a listener, you can do it. If you're a reader, you can do it. It's got questions at the back of each chapter, which, you know, makes you work a little bit. And there's many, many different ways to read it. You can read right through it, or you can stop and contemplate along the way.
You've got six award-winning actors doing this for your audio book.
That's right.
That's not bad.
That's right. That's good. But some people are readers. I was talking to a fellow this afternoon. He said, "No, I'm a reader." So I said, "Well, I'm going to order the hardcover." And they did a brilliant job. The paper is very good. Mm. The illustrations are fun. So, you know, still a book still has a certain allure for lots of people.
All right, indeed it does. Though I must admit, lately, this year, I've sort of started onto the audio books, and I sort of play them at night, you know. And yeah, sometimes I doze off, and I've got to try and remember where I was and go back to it.
I walk every day, so yeah. I used to hate walking. Now I love walking because I turn on my audiobook.
Right, when you're going. Yeah, good stuff. Now, you've got these two, this test second one. You've got another one in the pipeline, Ed?
Yeah, there'll be the Hagem Trilogy. I have one more book. It's going to be called Lessons on the Road Less Traveled. You see, I started writing these books almost 10 years ago, and I ended up with three manuscripts. And so I decided which one I was going to publish first, and the publisher felt that publishing my autobiography first, then the four P's, and then the lessons.
Right.
Lessons are they're about 30 lessons each, about four or five pages each, which kind of things like, you know, anything is possible, never be a victim, mm-hmm. early failure is a gift. That's one of my things. And then there's the famous one is balance is bullshit.
Right. So,
nobody's ever in balance, you know.
No, nobody's ever in balance. I mean, these people.
No, you're always out of balance because, by definition, if you're going to be successful, you focus. Once you focus, you neglect the other areas. You know.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, people on Wall Street, they focus on the business too much, and a lot of them wreck their families because of it. So, you know, I want to write these lessons down, simple, have a little fun with them, and maybe. So, what I'm hoping to see is when people read my books, that they come away with one or two ideas.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, you know, because you have a broad-based audience. You can't expect one idea to be successful with everybody. Yeah. If you write enough ideas down, then everybody will get something. And I think that's my design anyway.
I totally agree. When, you know, not everybody's the same. Otherwise, it'd be a very very boring world if everybody is the same. And because of that, you know, different things. It's like even my sort of YA books and stuff like that. Different people picked up different things. Some people picked up things that I didn't even think about when I wrote them.
That's what's so fascinating for me. People ask questions that make me really think about myself, and I learned an awful lot by writing these books about myself and about what I did. You know?
you never stop learning, Jim. That's the thing.
No, you never stop.
You never. I mean, no matter what age it is. I tell you, it was last night. I was watching a thing on YouTube that I've been following. It's a celebrity antique hunt, basically. You know, they go. It's an English thing, but they go. There's like two sort of celebrities, or you know, that go with two antique people, and they go out. They're £400, and they go out to, you know, antique places, and then they put them in auction. And you know, if they make any money, which is unusual. They never normally make the money. Then went to the Children in Need Fund, which is a thing they have in England every year that the whole country goes to. Sponsor sort of helps out on. Anyway, they had this thing. They were in a theatre because they stop off at places. They're in a theatre built in 1905. I can't remember the person's name. Very famous theatre designer, and they were saying that they explained why actors say break a leg because the curtains that go across are called flies or something like that, but the ones that go down in the wings on the stage are called legs. Now, when the people came to go on for cabaret shows and that, they didn't always know if they were going to get on. Depends if the person before was going down well, they kept it up and everything like that. And they didn't get paid until they were actually on the stage past these side curtains. Hence, they didn't get paid until they broke the leg. In other words, went past the leg and on the stage. And that's where... Now, I heard that yesterday and I thought, my God, I've heard that term for 70-odd years and now I know where it comes from.
You just taught me something. I never knew that either.
Exactly.
I've heard it many times.
Yeah. Anyway, Ed, it has been great having you on the show. Great last time, even better this time. So what I'm going to do now, Ed, is actually hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where people can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. It's always fun talking to you. And I would appreciate it if you'd go to Amazon or to Simon & Schuster and buy either one or both of my books. And I'd appreciate it if you would read them. I'm very humble when people read my books because I know there are 4 million books produced per year. Now you can go to my if you want to learn a little bit about me, I'm the only one of the few, there's no Hagems in the world. So my website is www.edhajim.com. And there's quite a bit of information right there. Or you can just type my name into Amazon and my two books will come up. Both are in audio as well as hardcover. And I've gotten, 205-star ratings on my first book and a half a dozen or so on my second book. And I just find that people have been very responsive at 10 different schools and kids seem to be responsive. And so that I think that I've created something which could help people get through the bumps in life or at least smooth out a few of the bumps. And that's my goal right now. Yeah. I am a very lucky man, and I want to communicate that there's ways to get through life a little easier than it seems.
Indeed. Well, Ed, as always, it has been a great pleasure chatting to you. Thanks very much, and good luck with the new book. And
My pleasure.
When the third one comes out, you're back again, Ed, okay?
All right, Barry. You have a great day.
And you.
And as you say in the trade, may the force be with you.
Exactly. Well, there you go. My guest today, great bloke, Ed Hajim. Now, if you put the Ed is E-D, just one D, right? E-D, H-A-J-I-M, edhajim.com. You find all sorts of things about the book and book excerpts and all the reviews and stuff like that. Terrific, terrific stuff. And as he said, it's a great to hear that, with all his success, he's passing it back with education and stuff like that. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show. Well, that's it for now. I'll be back again tomorrow. But don't forget, we have one thing left to say. Here we go. Don't forget.